Greetings, and welcome to the AeroTech First Quarter 2018 Earnings Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. A brief question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Yaakov Haroz, General Counsel. Thank you. Mr. Haroz, you may begin.
Thank you, Jerry. I would like to welcome everyone to AeroTech's first quarter 2018 earnings call. Hosting the call today are Dean Crotty, our Chief Executive Officer, and Kelly Keller, our Chief Financial Officer. Before I turn the call over to Dean and Kelly, I'd like to remind everyone that this conference call may contain projections or other forward-looking statements regarding future events or the future performance of the company. These statements are only predictions, and there can be no assurance that they will in fact occur. AeroTech does not assume any obligation to update that information. Actual events or results may differ materially from those projected, including as a result of changing market trends, reduced demand, and the competitive nature of AeroTech's industry, as well as other risks identified in the documents filed by the company with the Securities and Exchange Commission. In addition, certain non-GAAP financial measures will be discussed during this call. These non-GAAP measures are used by management to make strategic decisions, forecast future results, and evaluate the company's current performance. Management believes the presentation of these non-GAAP financial measures is useful to investors' understanding and assessment of the company's ongoing core operations and prospects for the future. Unless it is otherwise stated, it should be assumed that any financials discussed in this conference call will be provided on a non-GAAP basis. Full reconciliations of non-GAAP to GAAP financial measures are included in the earnings release. And with that, I'd like to now introduce AeroTech CEO Dean Crotty. Dean, the call is yours.
Thank you, Yaakov. For the first quarter of 2018, AeroTech reported $27 million in revenue and $2.2 million in adjusted EBITDA. These results are down from the solid fourth quarter that we reported, but significantly stronger than the same period a year ago and are consistent with our expectations. Our training and simulation division achieved $14.5 million in first quarter revenue, while our power systems division delivered $12.7 million of revenue in the quarter. Our training and simulation division is executing well on the order backlog we achieved in Q4 across all of our simulation product areas. Our air warfare segment continues to add engineers to our staff and to land additional work. In addition to the new awards that were featured in our Q1 earnings press release, this division's quarterly highlights included the completion of a jointly funded integration effort with Raytheon Solipsis, a Raytheon subsidiary. This effort brings our proven launch zone software, known as ZAP, into their situational awareness software application called Zeus. Zeus is used by remotely piloted aircraft operators for unmanned aerial vehicles such as Reaper to provide this tactical display from which weapons would be employed. A demonstration system with this capability is being fielded to the U.S. Air Force's Premier Weapons and Tactics Squadron at Nellis Air Force Base for evaluation of the highly accurate real-time weapon system employment information that ZAP provides. ZAP is the fielded solution on all piloted U.S. fighter aircraft for air-to-air weapon employment information, and this UAV application represents an important expansion to the family of ZAP-supported platforms. Our vehicle simulation group is performing well on the new commercial orders highlighted during our call last quarter and is generating expected revenue and earnings. Additionally, we completed a successful in-plant acceptance test of military driving training simulators for General Dynamics Land Systems Canada. These three systems, slated for delivery to one of GDLS Canada's end users, replicate the operation of their light armored vehicle. Our innovative solution leverages our military product line architecture and our simulation division's ongoing research and development efforts. Our current military driving simulator programs supporting customers such as the U.S. Army, the Army National Guard, and GDLS, combined with our continued product line investments, have produced a best-in-class solution. We believe this solution positions us well for future military driver training procurements, including the anticipated U.S. Army Common Driver Training Program, expected to be competed later this year. Our power system subsidiary, located in Israel, continues to progress on new initiatives to broaden our customer base through the development of lithium-ion versions of widely used batteries like the 6T military battery and a 12-volt commercial battery. Our international sales successes include the recently announced $3 million contract with the Canadian Department of National Defense for innovative battery chargers for the Canadian Armed Forces Integrated Soldier Systems Program. We also won an international tender to provide rechargeable batteries for use in a popular tactical radio made by Harris Corporation for an army in Southeast Asia. Our Israel group also began work on a new development order in the first quarter to provide a battery for Elbit's new strike drone, a very promising program that could lead to future battery production. Our power division in the U.S. continues to advance our hybrid power solutions. We are working closely with the U.S. Marines on MEPS testing and delivering on Green's orders. In addition to completing deliveries of our Green systems to the U.S. Army in support of their ground-based operational surveillance systems, we have successfully demonstrated the Green's capability working with fuel cell technology in the U.K. and have attracted the attention of several militaries in Europe. Our team working on DPCMS, the Distributed Power Control and Management System program with SAIC, continues to develop innovative new solutions that will help extend the life of the U.S. Marine Corps' amphibious assault vehicles. New capabilities that get funded for implementation will enhance the value of our expected DPCMS production efforts. We expect to be under contract later this year for the final 30 low-rate initial production vehicles and are responding to a request for proposal from SAIC for 344 full-rate production kits. Also in our U.S. Power Group, the Marine Corps extended our work on the Communications Emitter Sensing and Attack System by providing $1.9 million in new funding to procure additional systems in 2018. Given our current visibility and our first quarter performance, we are confirming our previously provided guidance for 2018 and expect to generate revenue of $100 to $105 million with adjusted earnings of $7 to $8 million. With that, I'd like now to turn the call over to Kelly Keller. Kelly, please go ahead.
Thank you, Dean. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining our call today. I'm going to discuss our financial results. Revenues for the first quarter of 2018 were $27.2 million compared to $22.3 million for the comparable period in 2017. This year-over-year increase was due to higher revenues in both our divisions. Gross profit for the first quarter was $7.7 million, or 28.3% of revenues, compared to $6.5 million, or 29% of revenues for the same period in the prior year. Operating income for the first quarter of 2018 was $1.1 million, compared to an operating loss of $227,000 for the same period in 2017. Operating expenses were $6.7 million in the first quarter of 18 and 17. Total other expenses, which is comprised mostly of interest expense and foreign currency transactions, was $213,000 for the first quarter of 2018, as compared to total other expense of $322,000 for the corresponding period in 2017. The company's net income for the first quarter of 2018 was $596,000, or 2 cents per share for basic and diluted, compared to a net loss of $768,000, or 3% loss per share for basic and diluted. Adjusted earnings per share for the quarter was 5 cents compared to 1 cent for the corresponding period in 2017. Adjusted earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, adjusted EBITDA, for the first quarter was approximately $2.2 million compared to $1 million for the corresponding period of 2017. We believe that information concerning adjusted EBITDA and adjusted earnings per share enhances overall understanding of our current financial performance. We compute adjusted EBITDA and adjusted earnings per share, which are non-GAAP financial measures. Both of these calculations, as well as the reconciliations to the GAAP measurements, are reflected in the tables of yesterday's press release. Now, discussing our balance sheet. Turning to the balance sheet, as of March 31, 2018, we had $8.2 million in cash and cash equivalents as compared to December 31, 2017, when we had $5.5 million in cash and cash equivalents. As of March 31, 2018, we had total debt of $16.5 million, consisting of $6.2 million in short-term bank debt under our credit facility and $10.3 million in long-term loans. This is in comparison to December 31st, 2017, when we had total debt of $15.9 million, consisting of $5.1 million in short-term bank debt under our credit facility and $10.8 million in long-term loans. As of March 31st, 2018, we also had $7.6 million in available unused bank lines of credit with our primary bank under our $15 million revolving credit facility. We maintained a current ratio, current assets divided by current liabilities, of 2.0 for the comparative periods. As of December 31, 2017, we had net operating loss carryforwards for U.S. federal income tax purposes of $40.7 million, which are available to offset future taxable income, if any, expiring in 2021 through 2032. Utilization of U.S. net operating losses is subject to annual limitations due to provisions of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986 and similar state provisions. At the end of the first quarter 2018, AeroTech had a backlog of $54 million versus $61.1 million at the end of the fourth quarter of 2017. The simulation division had a backlog of $33.1 million at the end of the first quarter 2018 versus $38.8 million in the fourth quarter of 17. The power system division had a backlog of $20.9 million at the end of the first quarter 2018 versus $22.3 million in the fourth quarter of 2017. This concludes our prepared remarks. Before we open the call up for Q&A, I'd like to remind all participants that Dean and I are regularly available to the investment community, and throughout the year, we look to participate in relevant conferences and investor events. Operator, you may now open the call up for questions.
Thank you. We'll now be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate that your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove yourself from the question queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. The first question is from Mr. Mike Crawford, B. Riley FBR. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Dean, what was the revenue breakout by segment in the quarter?
Good morning, Mike. Our power system reported $12.7 million, and our simulation division, $4.558.
I'm sorry, 12.6, you said?
Yeah, 12.691, I believe, was in our release.
Okay. Oh, great. And then in 2017, in the 10K, you break out the training and simulation revenue by group in greater detail, where we can see the air warfare simulations was the biggest, group component within there. Is that still the case in Q1? And then further, if you could help put some additional market opportunity around this expansion into unmanned systems simulation.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Yeah, we will be showing, going forward, this additional detail as required now by the new standard. I think if you look across our industry, everyone has offered a little bit more detail in their K's and Q's. Certainly, our air warfare segment has been doing very well. I highlighted on the call, as you mentioned, the fact that we expanded into an unmanned aerial vehicle platform for the first time. I don't know that all of our investors are aware that our software is on every fighter aircraft in the United States to provide weapon employment cues for the pilots. And we've been waiting our turn on unmanned vehicles for the weaponry to become sophisticated enough on those platforms to leverage our software platform. And we've very excited that we've broken through there with Raytheon Solipsis.
Right. Is there any way you could try to put a size that market expansion?
We don't have, as everybody knows, I think the unmanned market is becoming more and more of a reality and a bigger player. We can't put a dollar amount, if that's what you're looking for, on the size of that opportunity, but certainly to be a player in what appears to be a bigger part of our future is important for us.
Okay, thank you. And just one more from me. Can you say just maybe in further detail how you believe this work you're doing and the vehicle simulator positions you well for common driver training, and then when we might see that RFP?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. As you know, the common driver trainer effort here at FAC, our U.S. Training and Simulation Group, has been a big part of the company going back to the original platform that the Army awarded many years ago that FAC performed on. And we were waiting to get back into this arena with the upcoming Common Driver Trainer competition. That competition, there's a draft RFP that came out in March, and we expect the actual RFP probably towards the end of Q2, and we'll be responding to that. We've assembled a team that we believe is going to be very competitive, and we believe because of the size of the opportunity, it will be a highly competed acquisition for the Army. We think that the software that I highlighted that we just delivered to GDLS in Canada is a very good representation of what the Army will be looking for, and we've done a good job, I think, of making our customer, or hopefully our future customer, aware of where we stand in our preparedness to serve what's going to be the requirements for Common Driver Trainer.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike.
We have a question from Alec Gates, Clayton Partners. Please go ahead, sir.
Hey, good morning, Dean. I had just a couple questions for you. I guess first one, can you maybe talk in a little bit more detail about the timeline for the MEPS award? I know you fielded the test units, but generally, how are you expecting this to play out, and when could we actually see the award for meaningful production for those?
Yeah, thanks, Alex. Good morning. So as we've covered, we have delivered our systems to the Marine Corps. They are doing testing. Right now, they're getting their test environment into a position where they can gather data over long periods of time and do efficiency testing and other types of metrics that they're looking for to validate the performance of our system. We're, of course, supporting the Marine Corps in those test efforts. We believe that the Marine Corps will continue to do tests on the system pretty much through the duration of 18 and begin to look at doing an RFP in early 19. And I would be surprised if they could get this under contract before the second half of 2019. We obviously don't control the Marine Corps' timeline, but based on everything I know, Alex, I think that's a reasonable expectation.
Got it. And are there any mandates within the Marine Corps or anything that would push them to kind of follow this timeline, or is it, you know, something that could easily push out another year, in your opinion?
In my opinion, the Marine Corps, you know, palmed for a budget in the 2018 fiscal budget, and there's a sense of urgency to use that money or you lose it. So I think the timeline I laid out allows them to spend the money they've already acquired to purchase MEPS, and if they're to push it out much further, you get into a situation where those funds expire and they'd have to come up with new funds. So I think that is pretty much the biggest driver for them to stay on time. But obviously, you know, the Marine Corps will do what the Marine Corps wants to do. And I think, you know, I gave you my best guess at the timeline. I don't think I can commit further than that.
Okay. No, that's a good answer. And then last question is just how do you feel about the Milo business going forward? You guys showed really good growth in 2017. Do you see that growth continuing, or has it kind of plateaued?
We think that we can continue to grow that platform. We always are innovating new software applications into Milo to make it stand out as best in class. It is a very competitive marketplace. There's at least five good competitors in there that we compete against every day. But We have a good price point. We have a very, very good technical solution and a lot of good content on our product. So we're forecasting growth this year over last year. Won't be explosive, but as you know from my previous calls, we've had record sales years, 2 years running. We expect that to continue into this year.
Excellent. Okay. That does it for me. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We now have a question from Mr. Robert Maltby, Singular Research. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, Dean. Came on a little bit late, so I missed a little bit of the review of the numbers. Could you go over the backlog again? I think you gave year-over-year backlog.
I think Kelly highlighted in our call that our backlog was down from Q4 to Q1, from $38 million at the end of Q4 to $33 million at the end of the current quarter. And I think when you look at the breakdown of that backlog, it's going to show that the simulation division actually is the reason for the decline. And if you look further into our previous filings, you'll see that our simulation backlog at the end of Q1 this year is actually up $10 million from the equivalent quarter in 2017. So in all, you're looking at just contract timing for us. We're not concerned about where our backlog stands versus our projections for the year. And as I point out, it's actually in a better position than we were at a year ago, despite having a much better first quarter.
Oh, thank you. And regarding the guidance you're giving in your press release, I'm not sure that Kelly or you went over it on the call. I think you're guiding 100 to 115 million in revenue. Is that correct?
100
to 105. Well, 05. Sorry. Okay. And how does that compare to your guidance from last quarter?
We basically confirmed our guidance. The first quarter we thought was a good quarter, but we fell within the projections we had for this year, and we have not updated the guidance.
Okay. And finally, on your balance sheet, was there a year-over-year change in your debt structure?
No, not on our debt structure.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Fairly consistent year-over-year.
Yep, okay. Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the floor back over to management for closing remarks. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Jerry. Again, thank everyone for their interest in AeroTech, and that concludes our call for today.